Well, we're really excited this morning. We have, as many of you know, a guest speaker here with us. His name is Carl Medeiros, and he's been here several times in the past. He's a favorite. Many of you know him. You've talked to him. A lot of you have read his books. His most recent two books are Speaking of Jesus and his latest book, which just came out this year, Adventures in Saying Yes. Highly recommend both of those. I know lots of you read them. There are Carl's books and resources are at the table. I'm sure he'll tell you about those. But I'm just thrilled to have Carl here. In the last couple of years, I've actually had the chance to kind of get to know him a little bit better personally and spend a lot of time with him. And I just want to say this doesn't always happen, but like when you get to know somebody, that he's like the real deal. Like what he talks about and what he's going to tell us about today and how he lives are like the same thing. And it's just really refreshing and encouraging for me, and he's taught me so much. He's a friend, a mentor to me, and so would you just, let's put our hands together and welcome Carl Medeiros to speak.
Thanks, Matt. Wow, this is scary. Do you guys know that you don't just have an awesome pastor, but you have a great staff, you have a great worship team? You're cool as well, but I don't really know all of you, but I know those guys, and they're great. And it has been good to get to know Matt as well. I feel the same about him. It's true, you don't always really know somebody until you do, and then sometimes it's disappointing. You're kind of like, oh, they're actually better on stage. Excuse me, this is my daughter in Beirut calling. Just a minute here. Hello? Is this really her? She was going to call and say hi. My daughter Anna used to go here. Hello, Anna, hello. Are you there? Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Oh, there. Say hi to Common Way.
Hi, Common Way.
There you go. They said hi. They all love you, and they're sending $1 million in support.
Great.
She's like, I just texted her and said, can you say hi? And she's like, as long as it's not on video, I just got back from a run. So it's just audio. Anyway, thanks for doing this, Anna. You have anything you want to say to them, or is that it?
No, I just saw a picture my dad sent me and missed the church and just wanted to say hi from Beirut, so wish I could be there today.
There you go. Okay, we all love you, or at least I do. All right.
Bye.
See ya. Bye. Thanks for making your dad happy. Bye.
Bye.
See ya. Bye. Pray for me. I'm about to preach. That's always scary.
Okay. I will.
Okay. All right. Bye. That's right. I mean, I really did. I actually just texted a picture of Cliff and Julie and the band, and she goes, I texted and just said, about to speak at Common Way, and she goes, oh my goodness, those guys are amazing. I miss it so much. So I thought, oh, well, I could just have her call and say hi. So isn't that cool? I wanted to, like, do something really cool and, like, beam her up on the screen or whatever, but I was a little late, and she wasn't up for that. So anyway, you don't all know Anna, but she went to Taylor University, and come on. 8 Taylor kids here. That's good. I like that. 10? 15? That's pretty good. So this was her home church. Until now, I've told Matt and Liz that she still calls Common Way her home church. And she's been out of college for a couple years. She's now doing ministry with Syrian refugees in Lebanon, where she grew up. We happen to be there with her as well. For 12 years, and so she's happily back home, and her friends are still there, and she's reconnected with a whole pile of Lebanese friends that she grew up with, and trying to serve Syrians. You may have heard that there's a little thing going on in Syria. We just noticed it in America about a month ago, and we saw a picture, but it's been gone for 4 years, and it's probably the worst human disaster since Rwanda, and maybe the biggest, I think I've heard it's the biggest migration of people ever in the history of the planet. So it's like really, really, really serious. And it's hard to know what to do about big things like that, isn't it? But she just said, well, I want to go. So she just moved over there, been there for 4 months. She's living in an apartment right downtown Beirut by herself. They've been demonstrating in the streets, trying to overthrow the government. And I talked to her about 2 weeks ago. I said, Anna, you're not going to those demonstrations where some people have been killed and stuff, right? She goes, there was like this long pause. I said, Anna, are you going to those demonstrations? She goes, well, Dad, would you go to them? I said, well, that's different. I'm your father. She goes, well, I might be going to them, but I can't say. Like, well, what? Okay, well, I think you just said, so great. Anyway, all right, well, this morning, if you know me at all, there's no surprise to this talk. You probably heard some parts of this somewhere before if you've ever heard me talk before or if you've read my books, so sorry about that, but I just think it's so important that we get this right, that this idea, this thing that we share with our friends and neighbors isn't a doctrine, it isn't a religion, it isn't a thing at all, it's a person, and the person's name is Jesus, and we want to share Jesus with people because Jesus is awesome, right? I mean, that's why we do it, not because they should join our side, not because they're on the wrong side, not because they're wrong and we're right, it's just because Jesus is awesome. He's awesome. I mean, who wouldn't want to follow Jesus? I mean, really, who wouldn't want to follow him? I actually, sometimes people always ask me, what do I do? And it's kind of confusing what I do. So one of the fun ways that I say what I do is my wife and I have made a living out of traveling around the world trying to find somebody who doesn't like Jesus. And then people kind of go, what? What? What did you just say? Yeah, we're trying to find somebody that doesn't like Jesus. Why would you do that? Well, it just seems interesting. Like almost everybody I know does like Jesus, and so I'm just trying to find somebody who doesn't like him, just kind of for fun. You know, it's like, where is Waldo? Where's the guy that doesn't like Jesus? And I haven't found that person in the Muslim world. Now, I'm not saying everybody wants to follow Jesus as Lord and Savior and commit their lives to Jesus, but people liked him 2,000 years ago. Remember that? I mean, the crowds always followed him. People liked him. He was interesting. He was cool. He was edgy. He was hard on religious people, which everybody kind of likes. Like, yeah, those religious people. And so he was hard on them. He was kind of hard on the political, I don't know, was it right or left, but the political elite, he was hard on them. And the people that the common people didn't like, Jesus also didn't seem to like very much either. And so all the regular people liked Jesus, and they followed him in crowds, and then he fed them, and he multiplied food, and did cool tricks, and he made them feel better, and he said edgy things and interesting things, and he invited them to spend time with them. Everybody's lonely, so he spent time with people. People loved Jesus 2,000 years ago, and they still love him today. He's an attractive figure. Now we, the church and kind of Christians in general, haven't always modeled him. Sometimes we have. Sometimes we modeled him really well, but we haven't always modeled him well. So people can't see Jesus anymore, because I don't know if you know that or not, but he's like, I mean, he's not with us physically anymore. You knew that part. So now the physical expression of Jesus is, I know it's awkward, but it's us. And then we don't always look or act like Jesus, or I know I don't. And then that's weird. And then people look at me and they go, well, if you're what Jesus is supposed to be like, then I don't want to do that because I don't like you. You know, I mean, that does, I mean, not with me, but like people like me. Okay, so, me. So I just want to give you three thoughts, just three real simple thoughts about ways that you might share Jesus with our neighbors. We're not talking about Muslims today, although I really, really want to. We're not talking about Syrian refugees, although I would love to do that. We're not talking about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. Oh, that's so much fun to do in a church setting. That pretty much gets everybody mad. We're just going to talk about how you actually talk to your actual neighbors in ways that make sense about Jesus. Okay, so like your actual, Jesus said, the greatest commandment is to love God and love your neighbor. I've often wondered if he just actually means your neighbor. And you guys have thought about that some. I have a couple of friends named Dave Runyon and Jay Pathick that wrote a book called The Art of Neighboring, which I give them such a hard time. Like, guys, your whole book could just be nice to your actual neighbors. And then somehow you wrote 200 pages out of that. You know, way to go. And then you sold it. Good job. That's good. That's clever marketing. It's just be nice to your neighbors. I mean, you have a neighbor. God said everything is summarized by loving them. And then we somehow make them be somebody else, like your neighbor, which is what the guy did with Jesus. Like, who is my neighbor? It's like, well, maybe it's your neighbor, like your actual neighbor. You live in a dorm, it's the room next to you. That's your neighbor. So love your neighbor. So anyway, three thoughts about that. First of all, I think principle thought kind of number one is you should believe that what Jesus said was true in John chapter 4 is actually true. The harvest is ripe. The harvest is ripe. So the picking is easy. You go out into an orchard somewhere, and there are apples on the tree, and the apples are red or whatever, and you kind of pull on the apple, and it easily pops off the tree, and you bite into it, and it's tasty and juicy, not too hard, not too soft. It's ripe. You don't have to have a committee meeting to make it ripe. You don't have to think about it being ripe. You don't have to pray that it would be ripe. It is it's just ripe. Jesus actually never says to pray for the harvest to be ripe. He says the harvest is ripe. So where is it ripe? I would say everywhere. I haven't found any non-ripe harvest anywhere. So your neighbors are ripe. What that means is not that they smell bad, which I mean, that could be true as well. but they're ripe as in they're open to Jesus. Now, you might be tempted to have five reasons why that's not true with your neighbors. Like, Carl, you don't actually know my neighbors. They're definitely not open to Jesus. I'll bet they are. I'll bet they are. Some of that we did when we first moved back from Beirut. So we were in Beirut for 12 years. We've been back in America for 11 years. Interestingly, my wife and I are moving back to the Middle East 2 weeks from today. So we will have been 12 years in Beirut, then 11 years here, never going back. We're moving to a city you may have heard of called Dubai. We upgraded from Beirut to Dubai. Not really. Actually, we love Beirut, but we just feel like God wants us to be in the Arab Gulf, so we're moving to Dubai. And that'd be fun. It's a three-hour flight from Anna, and my son's studying in Brussels, Belgium, so a five-hour flight from him. And my other daughter's in Seattle, so too bad for her. She's just far away. I don't know. We'll see her every few years. So the harvest is ripe everywhere, and when we're living in a locale, whether it's Dubai or Beirut or Muncie or Denver, the neighbors that we have are just the ones that we have. You're kind of stuck with your neighbors. You often don't pick your neighbors. And if you go into that thinking that our neighbors want to know Jesus, that changes the way you act towards them rather than thinking they're really difficult. So instead of thinking neighbors are difficult, think, I bet they really want to know Jesus. And don't tell yourself that they don't. Tell yourself that they do. So when we came back from Beirut to a little place called Highlands Ranch, Colorado, South Denver, it's a classic kind of white, suburban, Republican, Christian-y sort of neighborhood, and very different from downtown Beirut. We moved into a cul-de-sac, bought a golden retriever and a Chevy Suburban just, you know, to fit in. And so we're living there thinking, I wonder if these neighbors will like Jesus as well. So we've been there for a couple months. We thought, well, let's find out. So we just thought, it was kind of weird, I know, but on one night, Chris and I, it was a Tuesday night. I don't know why I remember that, but we went to all the doors in our cul-de-sac and one door up on each side, so six houses around us, and knocked on the door and went to Rob and Krista's house first and said, hey, you know, and they said, hey, come on in. It was about 7 o'clock. They were just finishing up dinner. And I said, hey, would you guys, ever want to get together with our neighbors and study the life of Jesus? And I said, just like that, study the life of Jesus. And they go, and they were Catholic, and they go, oh, huh, yeah, that sounds interesting. And I said, okay, well, and then I didn't have any plan from there, so I was like, I should make something up real quick. So I said, how about this Friday night, you come to our house, and we'll figure out what we're going to do. They go, okay, great. Are you inviting everybody else? I said, we're going to invite all the neighbors. They go, oh, the rest of the neighbors aren't, you know, they're not Catholic like us. I go, yeah, most of them are nothings, but sometimes even nothings want to study. They go, I don't think that's going to work. So anyway, so even our Catholic friends are telling us that the neighbors aren't going to want to do it. So I'm thinking, oh, great. So we went to the other neighbors, and we're really good friends with these neighbors. So, and what's funny about the world these days is my neighbors have listened to me preach about them. You know, so I always try to be very honoring about them. But the neighbors next to them, I call them fake Buddhist because, you know, they're kind of white Buddhists who are mad at Christians, so they became Buddhists because Buddhists are always nice. I mean, that's kind of the kind of Buddhists they are. And I go, really, tell me like the ten tenets of Buddhism. Well, be nice and, you know, other stuff like that and karma. So anyway, I call them fake Buddhists. But anyway, they're kind of Buddhists. They're basically not Christian because they grew up in the church like so many people did, and they don't want that, so they became Buddhist. Anyway, so we went to their house, knocked on the door, and we go, hey, Rob and Krista and us. See, we kind of brought them in on the deal. We were thinking it'd be fun to do a little study in our cul-de-sac just to get to know people and stuff and get to know the life of Jesus a little bit more. You'll notice that I say Jesus, not Christ or Lord. Partly because those aren't his names. His name isn't Christ and his name isn't Lord. His name is Jesus. That's one good reason. Like, my wife is my wife, but when I call her the wife, I don't know why. She doesn't like that as much. And her name is Chris, so she appreciates being called that. And so Jesus' name is Jesus. And also, it sounds a little less religious. When you say we're going to study the Lord, that sounds kind of religious, especially if you emphasize the D like I'm doing. Or Christ, that sounds religious. Those are his titles. He is the Christ, by the way, and he is the Lord. And he is God, he is Savior, he's all kinds of things. But his name is Jesus. So we just kind of go with that. So we said to Tim and Kirsty, our fake Buddhist friends, you know, we're going to study Jesus. And you know, I don't know if you'd be into that or like. They go, Tim went like this. He goes, he folded his arms. He goes, is this a Christian thing? And they go, nope. But just about Jesus. He goes, isn't that a Christian thing? And I go, that's funny, my Christian friends think that's a Christian thing too, but I don't know if you know much about Jesus, but he wasn't even a Christian. All right, have you thought about that? Have you ever thought Jesus wasn't a Christian? I mean, that's not even controversial. He wasn't, he was Jewish. I don't know if this is shocking to anybody in here or not, but he was probably short, he was brown skin, hooked nose, from a region called Palestine, and he was Jewish. He wasn't from Tulsa, Oklahoma. He wasn't an American. He wasn't white, and he wasn't Republican. Or Democrat, but it's just more fun to say Republican. You know, just, I don't know why. You know, it's just more, it just pokes at more people. That's why, and that's what I want to do. Right? I mean, he wasn't, we know, and we kind of know that, but we forget that, and we present him as like a white American guy. He wasn't. He was a Middle Eastern guy, and he was Jewish. He wasn't a Christian. He was Jewish. And so when Tim says, is it a Christian thing? I said, no. And he goes, are you sure? I said, well, I'll tell you what. If whatever we decide to do together, if you find any Christian stuff in there, let me know. We'll just get rid of it. And he goes, okay, all right. That settled it. I mean, I don't even know what that means. You know, so I don't know how he knows what that means. I was making that up. But I kind of feel like that's true. Like, I don't know if there's, like, Christian stuff. Like, as he means it, you know that communication 101 is, right, basic. I mean, if you study communication at all in college, we all have to take a class, I think, or, you know, speech or something. Main point of communication is it's not what I say that matters only, but what you hear. So I could be saying a bunch of words like I am now. And the words I'm saying right now are hitting each of you differently. Some of you are like, yeah, I love this so far. This is really good. He's like getting those one people. And others of you are kind of going, oh, I don't know. He's ripping on some stuff that's pretty precious to me. So, right? So I'm saying words, but you're hearing them differently. So how they're going to hear the words Jesus is it's a Christian thing. And what a Christian thing means for our neighbors is that it's anti this and anti that and against those people and for sure not that, right? That is what they're thinking it is. That is what they think it is. And by the way, in the Muslim world, I'll sneak in a little Muslim stuff here. In the Muslim world, you say Christian, it means America. I mean, actually, I don't know if you know that, if that's actually what it means. It doesn't have anything to do with Jesus. It just means America. And then the Muslim world looks at America and kind of goes, huh, interesting. Or other things they might think as well. Right, so then maybe we need to just communicate in a way that actually hits the hearers in a way that makes sense to them and still have integrity. We don't want to lose our integrity, so we actually are talking about Jesus. Anyway, Tim and Kirstie said, yeah, we went around, Dick and Jan and Tracy and Ron and Ed and Sandy, and we invited all of our neighbors. And funny thing is, the last ones were just like total, they don't go to church, never been to church, never been Catholic or Methodist or Lutheran or, you know, none of the typical things ever. But when I said it to Ed, he goes, is this evangelistic? And I said, wow, evangelistic. I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, we're just talking about Jesus, but what do you mean? He goes, are you trying to evangelize us into Christianity? And I said, oh, no. I said, you know, I'm not even very good at that. I mean, actually, I used to try to do that with people, and it never worked, and so I don't do that anymore. So, no, it's definitely not that. And he's like, oh, okay. So, anyway, so We set up 7 o'clock Friday night at our house, and we're going to discuss. Now, actually, it ended up 7 houses said yes, and you know how that goes. They all say yes, but it doesn't really happen, but they actually all came. So 14 people, both man and wife from all 7 houses, all came to our house, so it's Chris and I, and we're sitting around the table, and we're having some crackers and cheese and wine, and I think maybe that wine is a key part of this strategy. And so we were just, like, talking and stuff, and see, that offended, like, 10% more people right there. By the end of the time, we'll have everybody, right, Matt? Well, like, everybody will be like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe you have that guy talk. I mean, it's obviously non-alcoholic wine. Okay, what was I talking about? And so I said, so let's just sit down and talk. So we went into our living room and sat down, and I didn't whip out my big King James Bible or anything. We just sat down, and I said, this is kind of fun because if nothing else, we'll get to know each other, and I just thought we could talk about Jesus, and I don't have really any plans, so anybody have any ideas? Like, do you guys have any ideas how we should do this? And Tim, the Buddhist, said, he goes, well, you're the expert on Jesus. And I said, no, I'm not. And he goes, yes, you are. And I said, no, I'm not. And so we had that for a while. And it's, for me, that's not reverse psychology. I'm thinking, I don't know what it means to be an expert on something, but I don't feel at all like an expert on Jesus. I mean, I don't know how much of Jesus you know. But, I mean, have you ever thought about how much of Jesus potentially you could know? It's, I don't know what that is, but let's say there's 100% that you could know of Jesus, whatever that would be. What percentage of Jesus do you think you know? You ever thought about that? See, I think this is a good humbling thought. Like, I'm hoping when I die to be up to 0.00001%. I've just decided, I don't know why, that if I could have four zeros only, like now I have a whole bunch of zeros before the 1 point, you know, percent. I mean, I for sure don't know one. You remember, he's the one that created the universe. It's that, that's the one that we're talking about. The one that by his breath, Colossians says, by his breathing, he holds it all together. So if Jesus stopped breathing, the universe would explode or implode or something that would not be good. By the way, that's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know if you heard that or not. So it's kind of awkward. But anyway, this is our last day together. There's like the fourth blood moon and the seventh cycle of the 48th year. And anyway, we're going to all be gone tomorrow. But or maybe not. I don't know. I'm just saying. Some people say that that's happening tomorrow. But if Jesus stopped breathing, everything would explode. So he's pretty big. So how much do we know? Are you an expert on Jesus? I mean, you know, Jesus, the king of the universe. Are we really experts on him? I mean, I know a little bit. Now, the 0.00001% of Jesus that I know has changed my life because he's so powerful. He's so big that just a little tiny bit of Jesus, just when he's kind of walking by in a crowd, if you're able to just to touch the robe of him, you could be, bam, instantly healed. That's the Jesus we're talking about. Not just any old Jesus. It's that one. But I'm not an expert. So that was kind of a funny conversation. Then somebody else said, well, we should read a book about Jesus. And I said, which book should we read? Which then everybody kind of goes, Carl, why would you say the book, you know, the Bible? Well, because, you know, again, educational principle 201, after it's not what I say that matters, but what you hear is, if you can get the answer rather than me telling you the answer, it works a lot better, right? So I want them to say. And so I said, well, which one would you like to read about Jesus? And Tim the Buddhist said, the Dalai Lama has a good book on Jesus. And I'm like, okay, well, that's where this doesn't go so well. But the Dalai Lama is a nice guy. And actually, I've read his book on Jesus. It's called Jesus by the Dalai Lama, you know. And as you might guess, it's a really nice Jesus, kind of a compassionate Jesus. And it's great. I've actually read that book. It's fine. I mean, I don't really want to study it with our neighbors necessarily, but it's okay. So he said that. I go, oh, okay. And then like five people jumped on him and said, no, that's ridiculous. You don't read a book about Jesus from the Dalai Lama, you read the Bible. And then everybody's like, yeah, well, the Bible, we should read the Bible. And then somebody says, I think it's the most stuff is in the Gospels, right? And I go, yeah, maybe. And then they go, no, it's definitely in the Gospels. It's like in the Matthew and the, there's a John. And then, anyway, after about 5 minutes, they got all four names I didn't say. And they figured out there's four books actually about Jesus in the Bible. Actually, the whole Bible is about Jesus, but four books specifically about him. So we said, great. And I'm thinking, what do we do next? And so I said, well, how would you like to read those or one of those or whatever? And Sandy, who's married to Ed, who's our next door neighbor, who are the ones that have no religion that were most skeptical about this, Sandy stands up. We're all sitting down in our living room. She stands up and she was an elementary school teacher. And she went like this. Okay, I have an idea. I don't know why she did that, but she actually did that. Like, you know, that just feels like an elementary school teacher, doesn't it? Okay, my wife went to Taylor like a while back, and she got an elementary education degree from Taylor, and my wife does this too. So, maybe they teach that at Taylor, I don't know. She said, so, I have an idea. What we do is when we get together next week, now I hadn't said anything about next week. In fact, I'm thinking I'm busy next week. I have to travel around talking to people about how to talk about Jesus. I don't really have time to do it. So she goes, next week when we get together. And then right then, Robin Christie goes, oh, well, how about at our house? And I was like, well, all right. Well, great. She goes, so next week we get together, what we do is we share stories about how we've done something that Jesus did. She goes, like, for instance, the time when Jesus was caught in adultery. And everybody goes, wait, what? And then she goes, no, I mean, he was caught with the woman in adultery. And they're like, no, he wasn't. She was caught in adultery. And then the story gets, I mean, if I had videoed this story, I'm sure it would be one of those, you know, 100 million YouTube viral videos because it's the funniest next 15 minutes ever. They piece together John chapter 8. They go, yeah, Jesus wasn't with the woman. There's another, some other guy, I think it was a Pharisee or something, and he ran away, of course. And then this woman's out there stuck with a bunch of Pharisaicals, that's what they call them, with a bunch of Pharisaicals. and they were throwing rocks at her. And Jesus, and she did this, and Jesus jumped in front of them. she actually did that. Jumped in front of them and said, "Do not throw rocks unless you don't have any sin." And they all go, "Oh." She actually said, "Oh," explicative. I don't think we're supposed to cuss in church, but, you know, "Oh, shoot." Got it? It's a sneaky way to not cuss. "Oh, shoot." And they all walked away. They're like, "Oh, shoot," because we have sin. And then Jesus came up to her and said, and now this is being pieced together by like the whole group. I haven't said a word about this story yet. And then Jesus came up to her and said, "Well, they're all gone now, and you're fine." It's not quite what he said, but, you know, kind of close. "You're fine, but don't do that anymore." And then she went away. And so anyway, basically over 10 minutes, they kind of piece this story of John chapter 8 together, which, you know, the classic last words are, "Where are your accusers? Where are those that accuse you, you know, lady, dear friend?" And she said, "They've all gone. I have no accusers." And he said, "And neither do I accuse you," which is this huge climax of a most amazing story with this woman who was caught in adultery. She was, now there's a guy in the story too that isn't there, but she was caught. And she should have been stoned. I mean, that's actually what the Jewish law would have said to do to her. And he didn't accuse her. And he said, "And by the way, doing that isn't good for you. You shouldn't do that anymore. You shouldn't sin anymore. So I don't accuse you, but don't do that." Because we don't sin because sin's stupid. Sin's not good for us, and Jesus likes you, and he doesn't want you to mess up your life. That's why you don't sin. Anyway, I don't know if you knew that or not. So they got the story all together. They got it right, kind of. And so then Sandy was still standing up, and she goes, "So this week then, what we should do is we should go around in the world, in our lives, looking for people like that lady who are hurting and broken. And then like Jesus did with her, we reach down." I don't know where she gets this, but she reached down, and we picked them up by their head. And I'm thinking, doesn't feel very comfortable. But we picked them up by their head, and we look into their eyes, and we give them dignity, like Jesus did. And I was thinking, wow, this is going really well. I mean, it's like a rocky start, but it's like wrapped up really nicely. I haven't done anything. I literally didn't say a word in that whole sermon that Sandy the atheist gave about Jesus. I don't know, again, where that fits in theology or whatever, but and people were like really affected and really moved. They're like, "Oh, this is so good." And so then next week, we gathered at Robin Christie's house. We still haven't really figured out what the plan was, and you actually can't imagine the stories people had. But they did what Jesus did with that woman, with people in their world, and they were all amazed. That was 10 years ago. Now them and most of our street has come to know Jesus, and Sandy's been the best at that. The harvest is ripe. You have to believe that. I mean, actually believe that. People want to know Jesus. They don't want to know all about our religious system. They don't want to know all about what they perceive Christianity to be, because they understand it or misunderstand it, or probably a percentage of both, right? Some of it they misunderstand, some of it's true. But Jesus is amazing. Even agnostics and atheists and Catholics and Protestants and evangelicals and Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims and fake Buddhists and fake everybody's and us, and we can all be attracted to him. That's thought number one. Thought number two is don't get defensive. I find this is an interesting one. I grew up in a system of evangelism. I was an evangelism explosion trainer. So you ask a couple questions and you get people. And basically, you know, it was with good intentions, but it was basically a getting people kind of a thing. Like you get them into our team. They're on another team, the wrong team, obviously, and you get them onto our team. I don't know if you've noticed how that works very well in any other part of life. Because let's take politics, for instance, just for fun. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's some, you know, like political stuff going on in America. I think we're having a presidential election right now, a year or so. I've heard that somewhere. And there are some people running that are, you know, candidates and ish. And then you have to decide, you know, who to vote for. And let's just say you're a Republican and you've been a Republican all your life, and that's partly you're a Republican like you're American, that you just are. But then also, let's say you believe it. Like, you really believe the Republican platform, Republican Party ideals are it. And then you have a friend, awkwardly, unfortunately, who's like a Democrat. And, you know, you don't know how that happened, but you do have one friend who's a Democrat, your kind of token Democrat friend. And he tells you, you know, "I can't believe you're going to really vote for, you know, whoever you're going to vote for, Ben Carson, Carly, or Donald, or somebody else, you know, you really ought to vote for Hillary Clinton, obviously. Now, does that work? Does that ever work? Like, do you ever go, oh my goodness, you're right. I never even thought about that. Thank you for saying that. Hillary Clinton, another Clinton, that's perfect. That's perfect. Now, does that ever happen? Like, in any universe, on either side, by the way, I mean, on either, does that ever happen? Does anybody ever come up to you and say, what, you're a Democrat? How stupid. You should be a Republican. And then you go, you're right. I mean, all my life I've been stupid, and now I see the light. I should be Republican. It never happens, but we act in our public discourse like that's going to happen. If I could just explain to you how wonderful the Republican platform is, you would convert. No. No, that actually, if anything, you make people more Democratic and more of a Democrat. Right? I don't know if you, other religions are like that too. When I went to Beirut, there's lots of Muslims that live there. That's the Arab world. So Muslims are everywhere. And I thought I'd just kind of announce that I've showed up. I'm Carl Medeiros from Colorado. I'm a Christian, and you should be too. And they would go, wow, I've never thought of that. I should become a Christian. Even though for 1,400 years, everybody I've ever known is a Muslim, and my whole family is a Muslim, and they would kill me. But other than that, that's a great idea. You know, thank you. Right? We kind of think that. And then with our neighbors and people at campus and people at work and your family members who are for sure not Christians for whatever reason, you think that if you just have some clever one-liners and some archaeological evidence and some textual evidence from the Bible and a little Josh McDowell and a couple of C.S. Lewis quotes, you're going to get them. And then you're surprised when it doesn't work. Well, that doesn't work. That's why it doesn't work. That's a, you should write that down. That was a good, that was a really good sentence there. I'm a public speaker. That's why it doesn't work, because it doesn't work. But it doesn't, right? Mostly it doesn't. Now, once in a while, we hear a story of some guy that got talked into it, and we call that apologetics, and we get excited about that and stuff. And every once in a while, you hear about a guy, Lee Strobel or whatever, that happened to, and then he's really good at that. It mostly doesn't work. How about that? Mostly doesn't. And by the way, it's interesting, it wasn't the way of Jesus. What did Jesus do with sinners? Well, he got in trouble for doing two things with sinners, eating with them and drinking with them. I'm thinking because he was eating and drinking with them a lot. I mean, obviously non-fermented grape juice. They just called it wine. I don't know why. Right? He was eating. He was a wine bibber. He was bibbing wine. I think that means drinking wine. And he was doing it with sinners. And he was in their homes. And he talked to prostitutes. And he talked to women in general, which is weird for a Jewish young rabbi kind of guy to do. And he hung out with kids. And he healed sick people. And he hugged lepers. And he freed demoniacs. It was all the wrong stuff for the religious people that were in his neighborhood. That's why everybody liked him, because he was so unusual, so confusing to the establishment, so confusing. He didn't really engage in politics in the world's thinking of politics, but he was very political. He kept announcing this new kingdom and that he was the king of the new kingdom. That's why Herod had all the baby boys 200 killed, because he had heard a new king was coming to town. And then sure enough, a new king did come to town and they killed him. That's why they killed him. They didn't want a new king in town. Jesus was announcing this new kingdom. His message was very political in the kingdom of God political sense, not in the way we think of politics today. Much deeper, much better, and actually much more controversial. But I find when people poke at you about your faith, we tend to get defensive. It's interesting that Jesus never did. One of my favorite times is in John chapter 6, he makes this crazy statement. He's giving a little speech to his disciples, and he says, you know, actually, if you want any part of me, you have to eat my body and drink my blood. And he said it just like that. And it actually says, basically, that many of the disciples were freaked out, and they left him. Many of his disciples left him, not the crowds. Now, if I'm in that situation, here's what I do. I turn to the ones that are left, Peter and the few faithful ones, and I go, guys, listen, I did that. Kind of, you know, we're trying to weed out the ones we don't really want here anyway, which is, you know, it's why I'm here today. No, that was supposed to be funny. It just didn't feel funny. And so you guys are still left. Let me explain it to you. I'm not encouraging cannibalism, obviously. I mean, don't, you know, eat my body and drink my blood. That's disgusting. What I mean by this is later the church will have communion. They'll have little tiny plastic cups you pass around, do it once a month, and then you have a little cracker. You know, it's fine. It's totally kosher. You know, don't freak out. No cannibalism at all. I would do that. I would explain it because I'm thinking they're going to all leave me because I just said this bizarre thing, and they obviously didn't understand. So I would explain myself, right? That's what we do. Somebody asks you a hard question, and you explain it. But Jesus just turns to the ones that are left and goes, do you guys want to leave too? What kind of an explanation is that? Do you notice Jesus never answered questions? Like, he would say things that didn't make any sense and then tell a story, not to explain it, but to also not make any sense even more, or I think we say make less sense, and then they'd be confused, and then he'd walk off. That's crazy. Like, who teaches like that? I don't do that. If you kind of go, wait, after church. After church, I'm thinking university, you know, Taylor and that, what's the small school that's here? Ball State. Also a joke that maybe wasn't as funny as it should have been. So if you don't understand and you come up to me afterwards, like, I don't get that thing that you said about, I want to explain myself to you because I feel a little insecure and I want to make sure you got it. Don't be offended. Don't be offended. I was just joking. I mean, I know I kind of overstated that one point. I was just kind of trying to make a point. It's kind of funny, I thought, but I missed it. Sorry. You know, I would explain myself. Why? Because I'm insecure. I actually want you to think that I'm smart. Jesus didn't have that issue. Jesus already knew he was smart. He's God. He created all these people around him that are asking him questions. He's thinking, you know, actually, I made you. I remember the day, sort of regret it, but anyway, I remember the day I made you. And now you're questioning me? Seriously? You're questioning me? You're creating? I mean, so, but he didn't have that bad attitude that I would have. He just kind of goes, yeah, okay, whatever. Then he goes over there and heals somebody and he just carries on. Because we're supposed to follow him. He's not following us. We're following him. He doesn't need to explain himself to anybody. But I find that I get defensive in these conversations. Somebody says to me, oh, if your God is so good, why is there so much suffering in the world? Like they really got a good one there. They usually say Africa. I don't know why. They go, why is there so much suffering in Africa? And I go, well, I mean, I'm thinking, really, if you were so concerned about suffering in Africa, why are you still here? You should go help those suffering people. But you're not, so you're a hypocrite. But I don't do that, usually. But I'm definitely thinking all that stuff. And so then I just kind of go, yeah, good point. And what I want to do is say, well, let me explain suffering to you. I've read C.S. Lewis's book, The Problem of Pain. I've read some stuff by St. Augustine and other smart people that are now dead. And really the deal is it's sin. You know, there's sin in the world, so... Which doesn't really make any sense if you think about it, because that means America, which generally isn't suffering as much as Africa is generally suffering, that America is more godly, innately godly than Africa. I don't know if you've been around America or not. We're not really that much like Jesus, and actually Africa has the largest percentage of Christians of any continent in the world, like by far. So that's actually not true. But what about Haiti? There are lots of suffering in Haiti. There are lots of people that love Jesus in Haiti. It's a ridiculous argument, as if this, because we're meeting in a beautiful convention center, means that we're godly, and that, because they live in a grass hut, means that they're sinners. It's actually a dumb argument, but we always do that. We always talk about original sin, and if they were just godly like us, like the West, and they would just come and be like the West, they could be Americans, and then, you know, which is godly, and then Christian, and then they would have money, which obviously is a blessing from God if you have money. We all know that's really true. And then they wouldn't be poor, which is a curse from God. I mean, the whole thing kind of falls apart, but we do that. We get defensive about an argument. Are you one of those guys that believe the Bible is actually true? I mean, you don't actually believe like Noah had a like little ark and floated around over, you know, for 40 days and then everybody died, do you? And then we kind of go, oh yeah, well, I'll prove to you that the ark and the fossils and the... That's weird. That's just really weird. And nobody believes that. I mean, nobody, whatever you're saying, I'm just saying that whatever your argument is, I'd love to hear how many people you've convinced into actually following Jesus who were very much not before you made those clever arguments. I've tried that a lot. Lord, liar, lunatic. One of C.S. Lewis's called the trilemma. I used to do that in Beirut. Well, you know, it's interesting. You're a Muslim, you believe in Jesus. I respect that. So do you know, Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and life. No man comes to the Father except through me. So that means he was either saying, either it's true, he was the Lord, or he was lying, he's just making that up, or he thought he was crazy. And then Muslims go, no, 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 you can't say Jesus is crazy or making it up. Ah, got you then, so he's got to be Lord. Nope, that's not one of the options either. No, no, you don't understand. And logic, when you make a statement like this, there's only three possible outcomes, and you diagram it out for them, and they go, no, no, there's other ones. Well, what are they? We don't know, but there are other ones. That's called Eastern logic. It's actually quite handy. It's just called, no, there's something else. That's what it's called. And so that never worked, but I tried that a lot, and it just actually never worked. That's apologetics. That's me apologizing for defending God, as if God needs our defense. Do you think God's up in heaven going, oh my goodness, thank God we've got Carl down there because we're not doing very well. You know, reputation's kind of soiled around the earth. And the Bible, I mean, the Bible's not doing very well either. Thankfully, though, we've got Carl and a few others that know how to defend the Bible. Charles Spurgeon, a great English preacher, said, the Bible is like a lion. You don't need to defend a lion. You just let it out of its cage. I mean, think about us defending the Bible. Think about you defending the Bible. The poor little Bible. You know, it doesn't, the Bible, it's the Word of God. It's the best-selling, actually, if you add up all books that have ever been written, the Bible's outsold all the rest of the books in the world. The Bible is amazing. It's an amazing book. If you believe it's the living, breathing, actual words of Jesus, that the Word of God, Bible, and the Word of God, Jesus, are in essence the same thing, there's great power in that. You just let it out of its cage. God doesn't need us to defend him. Last thought. Let me see what my last thought is. It's right here. I don't know if you know. That's why I'm not like doing Facebook on my phone or something. I was doing that earlier, but. Last thought. I mean, so the last thought is the whole thought. So thought number one, harvest is ripe everywhere. Thought number two is you don't have to be defensive. If somebody pokes you at your faith, just kind of relax. Just go, oh, that's interesting. And, you know, the other day when I was reading the scriptures, I was reading this thing about Jesus. Just carry on. It's actually a great style of argument. It's a non-arguing style of argument. And Jesus utilized it all the time. Where are you going? I can't follow you because I'm busy. He's like, oh, okay. And then he walks off. That's an interesting form of argument. You have to be really secure, though, to not argue in your argument. And I'm usually not. But if you can be good at that, you just ask a question back. Suffering in the world, you're right. I'm so sorry. Have you ever experienced suffering? And then maybe the person's heart's just hurting. Maybe that's why. And you're going to miss it by having an apologetic argument on the suffering of mankind and original sin instead of, oh, I kind of like those flashing lights. I think I was in a 1970s disco. I mean, not that I was ever in one of those, but. Just being relaxed, being chilled about it. That's my second point. Don't be defensive. And the third thought is the gospel really is a person. Change from thinking, just try this. Change from thinking when somebody says the gospel, which makes you think doctrine or Christianity, think of a person. Gospel just means good news. It's Old English for the word good news. I mean, that's the actual literal translation is good. Hey, got some good news. Jesus, and then you can fill in the blank. Now, ultimate good news is Jesus died and rose again. He's alive today. And in that death, he has covered all sins for all time. And we just receive that in grace by faith. We just kind of go, wow, that doesn't seem right. That doesn't even seem fair. And then we go, yep, that's not fair. I'm a knucklehead, but Jesus did that. So, wow, thank you. That's awesome. And you receive that as good news. That's kind of what we have called the gospel. Now, that is the gospel. That is good news. That's maybe ultimate good news. But fill in the blank. Jesus is fill in the blank with anything. That's good news. Anything Jesus said, when Jesus said Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, we all know that, right? It says, do not, starts with a J, rhymes with fudge. Do not judge. Hey, that's good news. Whew. Because I was doing a lot of judging, and that's like a lot of work, and that makes me really tired because I'm trying to figure out who's in, who's out, who's right, who's wrong. I don't have to do that anymore. That's nice. That's really relaxing. Hey, you guys can relax. God's got that. He's got that judging thing. You don't have to judge anybody. You don't have to think about it. Yeah, no. Breathe in, breathe out. You can not judge. Good news. A little bit later, he says, do not. Starts with a W, same passage. Worry. I have no idea. Worry. Do not worry. Boy, that's good news. That's good news. Guess what? You don't have to worry. God's got that. All that stuff, running around, trying to make money, trying to figure out college, trying to figure out, I have to get, by the way, you think college is hard, you're going to graduate someday. Oh, no, then you got to get a job, and that's, I mean, that's just hard, and what kind of job, and how can I make money, and guess what? Not that you don't have to think about it, you don't have to worry about it, ever. If you find yourself worrying at night, you're doing something that Jesus said don't do. He said, don't worry. I mean, that's fairly clear. The reason why you don't have to worry is because God's got that. That's good news. See, everything about Jesus is good news. I was, I'll play you this song. This is a fun little thing to do. This is really fun. I was out fishing with a friend recently. He's a fly fisherman, and I'm trying to be one. And we were fishing in his pond, kind of. And every cast, we're catching like an 8-pound brown trout. It was horrible. And on a fly rod, I don't know if you ever fly fish before, that feels like you actually are catching a whale. Like, literally, you catch like some of the fish almost, you know, felt like they're going to pull me in. And then we got tired, and he goes, hey, you want to meet my neighbor? And I go, sure, who's your neighbor? And this is, if you are under 30, only if you're under 30, guess who this is. Let's see if you can guess it first. Where's my microphone? You have to be under 30. Do not say who this is if you're over 30. I want to see if anybody under 30 knows who this is. Yell it out.
You are so
under 30.
Beautiful.
Not Ray Charles. Nice try. Come on, yell it out. Under 30. Okay, over 30. Look at you guys. That's hilarious. Isn't that funny? Joe Cocker. Everybody's like, who? Joe Cocker. Woodstock? You ever heard of Woodstock? No. Woodstock? Does that ring a bell? Joe Cocker? Yeah, anyway, that's Joe Cocker. The Joe Cocker is my friend's neighbor. He owned the ranch right next to my friend. Who knew? He's been living in Colorado for 17 years. He just died last year, so this is about a year. This is actually 6 months before he died. And I go, yeah, I'd love to meet Joe Cocker. How cool. I mean, I'm just kind of on that. I wasn't kind of the Woodstock. I was born in 61, so I was a little young for kind of that era. But, I mean, obviously, I still grew up with Joe Cocker music, and that's one of his more famous songs. He has that real raspy voice that some love and some don't, but whatever. Anyway, he's pretty famous, kind of a big deal. I'm like, yeah, great. So we jump in my friend Duffy's pickup. We're driving down the gravel road about a mile to Joe Cocker's ranch. Actually, my friend Duffy bought his 300 acres from Joe's 2,000 acres. Just over the mountains from Aspen, Colorado. I'm guessing that 2,000 acres cost more than 2,000 acres in Muncie would cost. So I'm not sure, but it feels like it would be more. And he has this big, beautiful castle, which I found out later he's imported piece by piece from England. You know, just kind of funny stuff. And the whole time down, my friend Duffy is going, now, Carl, listen, here's the deal. I've known Joe for 17 years. He doesn't want any part of Christianity. I've been witnessing to him for 17 years. He's not, so just, I mean, honor my friendship with him and don't bring up Christianity at all. And I go, dude, you know me. Would I ever talk about Christianity? And he goes, yeah, you don't do that Jesus thing that you do. He actually did that. He's driving and he went like that. He let go of the steering wheel and that goes, that Jesus thing like that. I don't know what that is, but I go, well, I don't know how to not do the Jesus thing, but I mean, okay. He said, don't talk about Christianity or Jesus. I go, well, I don't know how to not talk about Jesus, but it's easy to not talk about Christianity. I don't ever do that. I can't remember the last time I like talked about Christianity, but I don't know how to not talk about Jesus, but I'll try. And I have some friends who are kind of important, and I know it's awkward. You introduce a friend to one of your important friends, and they say something weird that just feels weird. So I said, okay, I get it. I'll try to be really good. He goes, no, I'm serious. We're walking up the door. He goes, seriously. He's given us 5 minutes. The band is recording this in the a new album in the basement of the house, which their studio was there. And 5 minutes to just say hi. So I go, okay, great. So we go in. Joe Cocker's making a green wheatgrass shake. And he said to me, I've been sober for 8 years. And I thought, well, it's good. He doesn't look like he's been sober for very long. And he's drinking this green juice stuff. And he goes, Joe, hi, I'm Carl. He goes, so what do you do? And I looked at my friend Duffy and he went. So I said, I'm thinking, what do I do without saying the word Jesus? I go, I do different things, but one of the things we do is we bring Israelis and Palestinians together kind of in back rooms and discuss and kind of do peacemaking, which is obviously going really well. And, that's one thing I do. He goes, really? That's so interesting. He goes, how do you do that? And I look at Duffy and he's like, And I'm thinking, how do I do that without saying Jesus? So I go, well, you know, we read some materials and stuff that, you know, Muslims and Jews and everybody in that part of the world kind of agree on generally, and we kind of use that for a foundation, you know, of bringing people together, which is true. He goes, why are you acting like that? He said, what are those materials? And I looked at Duffy, and he's like, oh, you know, what can I do now? So I just said, well, it's actually the Sermon on the Mount by Jesus. It's like the ethics of Jesus, the main ethical teachings of Jesus. And he goes, really? Why don't you just say that? And I go, well, you know, I just, you know, and then Duffy thinks, he defended me. He's like, well, I told him that you don't like Christianity. And then Joe goes, Christianity? I go, yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. We're just, you know, talking about the Sermon on the Mount, which is a Jewish thing with some Jewish people and stuff. And he goes, well, how do you do that? I said, well, we just sit down and read it all the way through. It's about 23 minutes if you just read it all the way through. And then we just have a discussion about it. He goes, really? He said, what book is that in? I'm thinking, what book is that in? I go, you mean the Sermon on the Mount? He goes, yeah, what book's that in? I said, it's the Bible? He goes, really? And then he goes, hey, Nancy. His maid's name is Nancy. It's not his wife, it was his maid. Nancy. He goes, do we have any of those, he looked at me, I go, Bible? Do we have like a Bible around? She goes, yes, sir, I think we do. So she disappeared down to the basement. She comes back up with a family Bible. It's like this big. And he goes, I'm serious. And she was going like this. She plopped it down on the kitchen table. He goes, well, let's read it. I go, like, you want to read it right now? And then Duffy goes, well, it's kind of long. And I glared at him like, you idiot, we're on the same team here. What do you mean it's kind of long? What are you talking about? And he wants to read it. And I said, yes, I've got plenty of time. I thought you had a... He's like, no, let's read it. This is so interesting. I've never even heard this before. And I'm like looking at my friend Duffy, who's been, remember, witnessing to him for 17 years. So we go out, put it on the coffee table, open it up to Matthew chapter 5. I read Matthew chapter 5. My friend read chapter 6. Joe read chapter 7. And if you remember, I just said it. First verse, chapter 7 is what? Do not judge. So he kept going... Like, he would grunt. Like, he'd read something and go, oh. Like, he was getting punched in the gut, or he had a thought, or whatever. And I said, no, you can't have thoughts right now. We're just reading all the way through. So there's about 25 minutes. We read all the way through. His bandmates kept coming up and going, Joe, dude, what are you doing? We got to record. He's like, get out of here. And he actually would cuss at him. We're reading the Bible. Get the blankety blank out of here. That's what he was doing. And so we finished the whole thing. And it's now been, you know, 23, 25 minutes of reading and 5 minutes of talking. And then he goes... Well, then what do you do with the Palestinians and Israelis? So I said, well, do you want me to do what I do with them? He goes, yeah, I want you to do that right now. So we discussed the Sermon on the Mount for about 2.5 more hours. And his bandmates kept coming up and then going down. And he'd cuss at them, they'd go back downstairs. And then he was just like overwhelmed. Like the things that Jesus says in there. Not just be salt and light and love your neighbors, but love your enemies. Who says that stuff? Who says that? And you've heard it said that you shouldn't commit adultery, but I say that if you even look at a woman with that intent, even think about it, you've committed adultery. Who says, who talks like that? It's crazy. I mean, it's actually crazy. If you just read it face value, you have to think, what is this? And so here, you can just see, you know, the old cartoons, like with the smokes coming out of the ears of, you know, the whatever, like his head, it looked like his head was going to explode. We get done, 2.5 hours. He's just like immersed in this. Finally, all five of his bandmates come up and they go, we have to go, Joe. We have one more hour to record. We have to finish this song right now. So he stands up and he turns to my friend Duffy. He goes, I've known you for 17 years. Why have you never told me this stuff? And remember, Duffy was the one who's been witnessing to him for 17 years and said, Joe doesn't like Christianity. I'm telling you, we have to get the message right. It's not a detail. It's not just semantics. That's what somebody will come up to me afterwards and go, well, yeah, but, and you're going to do that even though I'm now making fun of you? You're still going to do it anyway. Well, yeah, but I think that, you know, you're kind of dissing Christianity and lifting up. That's just, you know, first of all, it's not really fair to 2,000 years of Christian history. And secondly, I think it's just semantics. Well, yeah, okay, it is semantics because semantics are how you use words and words are important. But it's definitely not just semantics. This stuff is important. When you lift up Jesus, he says he draws everybody to himself. Do you know that you can't convert anybody anyway? All our responsibility is to let the stuff that's in our heart come out of our mouth. Whatever's in there will come out. I live in Denver. I've accepted the Denver Broncos into my heart as my personal football team. When I open my mouth, Broncos come out. I love them. You don't have to know me. I love my wife. My wife is in my heart. I talk about Chris all the time. I love Anna. I thought, wouldn't it be fun for you to say hi to Anna because she's so awesome? It comes out. I love my daughter Marie. I love my son John. Things that are in there come out of me. You don't have to try to get Jesus to come out. Either he's in there or he's not. If he's in you, I'm not just like saying you prayed to have him in your heart in some kind of a spiritual moment in 1976. I'm saying like you're consumed with the things of Jesus. If he's in there, he'll come out whenever you talk. You don't have to try to do that. It just happens. I never went to a seminar when our quarterback, Peyton Manning. That's fun to say that here. Wow, I like that. Throws a pass to Demaryius Thomas, and he crosses the goal line. I never went to a seminar that says right when Demaryius Thomas crosses the goal line, right when he crosses it, Carl, you're sitting down, and you're being comfortable, and then you jump up, and you throw your hands in the air like this, and then you open your mouth, and you go, ah. I never went to that seminar ever in my life. I never went to a cheering for the Broncos when they score a touchdown seminar. It just happens automatically. These days, not that much, actually, but normal, like last year, it happened a lot. And it would just automatically come out because the Broncos are in my heart. Really. I mean, I know it sounds silly, but I'm just trying to make it real earthy. When Jesus is in there, he comes out. You don't have to defend him. I'm not trying to make a Kansas City Chiefs fan a Denver Bronco fan. I'm not evangelizing you. I'm not saying you should be a Broncos fan, even though, I mean, I think you should. But you might like other teams. I don't know why you would, but you might like other teams. My guess is I can't convince you to switch. That's just a guess. So I'm not evangelizing you to trying to get you to switch allegiances to the Denver Broncos when I talk about them. I'm just saying, no, I like them. I think they're cool. Even they don't do good, I still like them, really. I like Jesus all the time. Even when I'm having a bad day, he's still doing great. I've never seen him have a bad day. He's awesome. I'm not trying to evangelize you onto my side. I'm just telling you what's true. You can do actually whatever you want. Actually, I don't even care. I mean, I used to care more than I care now. I know you're not supposed to say that, but honestly, you can do whatever you want. I'm not a salesperson. I'm not in a sales team. I don't have notches in my belt. I don't get commission for signing people up. It's not a downline, upline. It's not a pyramid. It's not a, you know, there's no kind of a thing going on. I'm just saying he's awesome. And if you don't know him, you ought to. I think you'd like him if you knew him. I really do. I think if you actually knew the Jesus of Nazareth of the Bible, the real one, not the one from Tulsa, Oklahoma, but the actual one, if you knew him, I think you'd like him. And you might find as you get close to him that you liked him so much you'd fall in love with him. I mean, actually love him. And then you might start to realize that he loves you more than you could ever love him, and he's the only person in the world that can love you unconditionally. And you might think, man, I should actually like go all in with Jesus, because he's so good. I mean, you might think that, but you might not. You might get kind of close and go, whoa, this is too intense. I don't know. I don't know what you think about Jesus is up to you and Jesus. I'm not representing him. I'm just telling you this is what I have found to be true. So I'm saying that to you, by the way. I wasn't giving you an example. Okay, was it examples? Well, how you might talk to somebody else. I'm saying to you, that if you really knew Jesus, I'm not asking you, we're not going to have an altar call, by the way. We're not going to come forward and we're not going to sing just as I am and come forward. Although we could do that, but I wasn't planning to do that. And I doubt Cliff knows just as I am. You do? Yeah, it's tempting then, isn't it? When was the last time we had an altar call? Young people are going, what's an altar call? There's no altar up there. I don't even know what an altar is. I'm saying that to you because it's true for you too. Jesus is good, and he really likes you. I think he even loves you unconditionally. You can't do anything to get him to love you more. You can't be better, so he'll love you more. And by the way, when you screw up, he doesn't love you less. He just loves you. It's not even fair. You could be a total knucklehead, and he thinks you're awesome. And we're kind of like, no, Jesus, that guy, he's like a jerk. Jesus thinks you're awesome. All the jerks, raise your hand. Wow, a lot of people went for that. Jesus thinks you're awesome. Isn't that cool? So when you talk, do you get this feeling? I'm trying to transfer a feeling of how we would do this rather than just give you some words. We're not selling anything. Do you get that? Do you feel that? Do you feel the difference in how some of us that grew up in the church, how we are raised to convince you to join our team, and the difference in how I'm saying it? It's pretty significant. I want to pray for you guys. I want to pray when I close and just pray that God would get this stuff deep inside you. Some transaction of the Holy Spirit would go deeper than just my words you have this morning and actually kind of go deep inside with what I've said. I do have some stuff. I don't know how I got all this stuff, but I have like DVDs, and I have some DVDs about Muslim stuff, and there's a thing called Simply Jesus. Oh, and I got a whole bunch of stickers that just say Simply Jesus, because that's what I'm about. This is really funny. I actually trademarked that, so I actually own the word Simply in Jesus, so you can't use either of those words ever again without giving me royalty. I just wanted to tell you that. I really, do you know, did I tell you that? I don't know, why did I do that? That's so weird. I paid $1,100 and now I have the trademark for the term Simply Jesus. Like, who cares? Anyway, you can have it for free, both Simply and Jesus and together. And there's a bunch of little sticker things. Don't put these on your car because you probably drive like a hellion. You know, but like maybe on the back of your computer or something. You know, maybe that would be good. But they're out there. And then some DVDs about Jesus and Muslims. And this one is engaged. This is me talking to about 100 people in a bar in Denver every Monday night for 10 weeks. They're all there with a drink going, why are we listening to a guy talk to us about Jesus? That's weird. That was really fun. This was like a lot of fun. And the book, Speaking of Jesus, and that new book called Adventures in Saying Yes. And for the right price, you can even have my iPhone. No, seriously, you could. Let's pray. How about if you stand up, just because we need to stand up and stretch. And I promise not to call you forward, although I really want to. I just want somebody to come forward. Thank you, God. You're awesome. Your son, Jesus, is amazing. It's so much fun to follow you, Jesus. Follow you around the world. And I forgot to tell you. Did I tell you? We're moving to Dubai in 2 weeks? Oh, I told you that. So pray for us. I'm interrupting my prayer. But I was praying, so I was okay to interrupt my own. So think about praying for Anna in Beirut and praying for Carl and Chris in Dubai. And so we just, back to you, God. We do think you're fun, you're interesting, you're adventurous. I can't imagine, Jesus, that everybody wouldn't want to follow you. I just don't think they know you. They just don't know. They don't know how good you are, how amazing you are, how interesting you are, how adventurous you are. They think you're boring. They think you're an old man in a white dress with a long beard and a thing that hits people over the head, I think. I'm not sure what they're thinking, but we know that's not who you actually are. And so we want to be better at inviting people into your presence, inviting people to church on Sundays to experience you. That's a good place to start, to a small group over coffee to talk about you. And so I pray the things I've said that are actually helpful, however many of those things were helpful, you'd help people remember them. And do them, put them into practice. And the things I said were stupid, just help people forget those things. And love this church and Matt and Liz and the leaders here. Just ask for your blessing and lots of grace and growth and fun and adventure ahead for Common Way. In Jesus' name, amen.